this channel. All right, welcome, lovely people, to episode 2 of Peachy and the Colonel. I am the Colonel, as you may have guessed.
And I'm Peachy.
You kind of look a bit peachy, actually. It's good. And today we have a very special treat for everybody. We have a guy. His name's not Ben. That's all I can tell you. He's our resident money guy. So welcome, the money guy.
Yeah, welcome, Mr. Numbers. Oh, we're looking forward to quizzing you this evening.
Very great to be here.
Look, we're going to focus, as always, on the simple things, but we're lucky today we've got a bit of a resident expert, so we will cover a bit of money stuff. That's something I've always been terrible with.
Shocking.
Well, I would have been terrible with it if I ever had any money to be terrible with it. I've just never been good at getting it. As usual, we're going to try and keep things rather simple. Things that relate to all of our lives and, the little things.
Recording here tonight on a Sunday night, and I just want to, in general, talk about weekend activities. I think that's an interesting kind of topic to start off with. How's everybody spent their weekend? You know, we were discussing this last night at dinner and talking about how some couples that, I'm friends with, they choose to spend their whole weekend on domestics. Saturday morning, they're like doing the shopping, then they're doing the week's worth of cooking on the Sunday and dealing with the children. It's 2 days worth of domestics. Now, that to me is a horrendous way to spend your weekend. I actually like to try and get all of that stuff out of the way during the week so that on the weekend it's just all social time.
Wow.
You know, like it's just all time. I mean, that's the ideal. It's probably not. I still probably on a Saturday morning do a bit of vacuuming and that sort of thing. But increasingly, and I don't know whether this is an age thing, but increasingly people are getting help in, and I find that a fascinating idea too. I'd quite like to be able to afford help. Perhaps you can give me the hot tip on that, Mr. Numbers, later. How to afford help in the domestic scenario. And is that whole domestic breakdown actually, you know, the be-all and end-all of a relationship, you know? How do we come at it, you know? Are the dishes the sort of thing that can break you? I reckon they are in the long run.
Dishwasher is a handy investment.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
I came up with a very simple rule early on when living in share houses, and that was there were a lot of notes and, you know, rosters and all that sort of bullshit. And luckily I lived with two of my best mates. We all had a very similar standard of hygiene, which helps. And, you know, if I wanted the kitchen to be cleaner than it was, I'd clean the kitchen. And if someone else wanted the bathroom to be cleaner, they'd just clean it. There was no keeping tabs or anything. As I say, it relies on you all having similar values. But that's as far as I take it. I do have, I look around the house, and if something bugs me, I just fix it.
Actually, housemate habits are interesting though, aren't they? The way different people kind of come at hygiene is interesting. I remember one of our friends who lived with this person who used to stash all of their food, tinned food and things, under their bed because they just
You don't do that.
Because they didn't trust that people wouldn't steal their food. Like it was sort of Lord of the Flies stuff in that house.
Their food,
it was real,
not
yeah.
DVD player or
yeah,
anything like
no,
that.
Like their food and also all of their cleaning products. So, you know, like they didn't want to even share their spray and wipe. I thought that was kind of extreme.
Oh, that's weird. Unless you've got some really, you know, some
Gucci.
secret lab Gucci cleaning shit that, you know, it's for your toilet and your toilet only.
Actually, my mum was given for her birthday this year, late last year, this incredible box, and it was all done up in a big bow, this green thing, and we were all kind of excited. We thought something really amazing was going to be in it. And actually, the package contained really, really fancy spray and wipe and detergent for the sink. It was phenomenal. It was like aromatherapy stuff. And I have to tell you, like, I know you think this is impossible, but I can tell you, this stuff is the bomb. You clean your fridge with this aromatherapy spray and wipe. I reckon it must be like $20 a bottle. It must be. I don't know. I would certainly never buy it for myself. Mum was deeply disappointed with it as a gift. But we cleaned the fridge with it, and the fridge
and
just
it
smelled good for ages.
It worked.
Exactly. It was fabulous. It worked, and it, you know, made everything smell like roses. It was brilliant. You know, it was about as good as it gets. There was no like chemical yuckiness to it at all. I don't know. And another girlfriend of mine's invested in all those everything's bicarb of soda and vinegar kind of versions of things. Doesn't clean anything. Sucks. Mm. But this stuff, I don't know, maybe it's because it came in a nice green box.
Give me the bleach.
Yeah.
Give me the...
Yeah.
Whatever it takes,
yep.
I want it clean.
Yeah, absolutely.
I suppose having a really fancy spray and wipe would cut down the cleaning time too, so maybe it's not a weekly chore anymore, right?
What's more important, your money or your time?
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Actually, that's quite an interesting idea, really, because often I think... Well, it's a bit like going in the tunnel every day for me to work. I would rather spend that $4 going in the tunnel than I would spend 15 minutes in traffic.
Oh, like you'll spend 15 minutes in the tunnel too, though? Isn't it a bit of a car park?
Well, it can be. I mean, I guess it depends on which day I'm going. And probably with all these Westgate works now, it will be like that, I reckon. But I actually think overall that $4 is worth my time.
I think you're worth it too, Peach.
Oh, thanks.
So how much time do you think you save?
At least 15 minutes in the morning.
You save 15 minutes.
15 minutes, yeah.
Well, that's not bad.
And to me, that's like, that's really...
It's $16 an hour.
Exactly. And that's really good time in the morning, you know, like 15 minutes extra in bed is, you know, not to be sniffed at.
But that's only close to the minimum wage, right? If you think about it.
It's true.
So it's actually not that good.
What is the minimum wage? Just
it depends on your age and what you're doing. And
well, I'm 35.
What would you be doing? What would you be doing? Right,
that's probably somewhere. It would be close. $17
It's about 17
it
or 18 bucks. Yeah. So 16 bucks. You think it's good money, but you'd be taking your employer to court.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I mean, I think that's it's interesting, isn't it? The way you justify. Like what you spend your money on. That's an interesting thing. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you must hear all sorts of weird excuses, Mr. Numbers, you know.
I do see some.
Yeah. Like, too. I just have to spend, you know, $80 a week on coffee. That's absolutely vital for me. You know, the way people prioritize things is interesting. Mm. I spend money on all sorts of things that I'm not a money person. Like, I don't keep track of stuff at all. But there are things that I would not even think twice about spending on that I have friends who would be totally freaked out by that. Like, for instance, coffee. You know, I like coffee. And I worked down the other day that I spend 80% of my sort of expendable wage on going out and eating and drinking with friends. Like that to me.
A lot of people do.
That's the source of life, you know. Like that's what's really good. And
but you're probably a very happy person too, right?
Well, yes, but I'm a person with no savings as a result of this, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've got no buffer.
But people tend to spend the money no matter what. The more money you earn, the more money you spend.
Yeah.
It's like this perpetuating habit.
Yeah, and instead of buying a VB, you buy a Peroni or you buy a, you know.
Yeah, if you weren't going out and having dinners or whatever like that, you'd be spending it on something else. Yeah. It'd be something else.
Do you think that people do fall into those two categories generally in terms of like savers and spenders? Is that actually, you know, in your experience as an accountant, do you
probably,
see
but
like
I
a
find,
type walk through the door? Or?
Yeah, I find everyone's a spend. Most people are spenders.
Right,
most
okay.
people are spenders.
Yeah. And do most people who are savers, this is just my like pet theory, but do most people who are savers, have they got like a sort of traumatic childhood background where they wanted for things? Because most of the people I know who are really good savers, they had times in their childhood where they went without, and so that buffer becomes quite important to them because they know that without it,
I don't think so. I think it's more than that.
I
think it's much more than that. You'll see people come from the same family, you know, the brothers, and one will be a terrific saver and the other's a terrific spender.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
That's just the way it is.
Is it an extrovert-introvert thing? Is it a star sign thing? Come on, Mr. Numbers.
my partner's of Chinese descent. And they're good savers. And it's just a cultural thing. All her friends are the same. Remember her friend was complaining, she lives in San Francisco, her friend was complaining her rent went up from $230 a week to $245 a week. And she was calling my partner for advice. And we're like, hang on, don't you, you got a pretty good job. And she's like, oh, I'm on like $195K a year.
Whoa.
And... And we're like, so sorry, so you're haggling with us over $15 a week. And she's like, oh, but I need to save as well. I'm like, how much are you saving? Oh, you know, like, you know, 75% of my weight. You know,
it's
incredible.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
And in their culture, you're expected to give that money to your family, like you're part of a collective.
Yeah, right.
But it's also that thing, isn't it, of you often hear that people who are wealthy – are wealthy because every cent is accounted for, and they don't, you know, like we've got one good friend from school who's, you know, parent-in-law's house I went to, like amazing sort of mansion in Port Melbourne overlooking the bay, incredible, incredible. And everything in the cupboards is home brand, absolutely everything. Yeah. Where you can save a cent, they save a cent. And there's something to be said for that. I mean, I have no proclivities in terms of that, but yeah,
That's the same. My father's the same. He's now got heaps of money, but it's because he's an absolute tight ass. And he's, you know, when we went out as kids, if we went to a restaurant, there's no drinks because the drinks just don't make sense. What, like $4 for a Coke? And that's like 25 or like, you know, 40% of the cost of your meal is in one fizzy drink that costs 20 cents to put together with some post-mix out the back. So things like that, you save the money in those times and then you can afford a boat later in your life, you know?
You're right. That's it's the old saying, it's how the rich stay rich and the poor stay poor.
So I want to ask you guys a simple money tip. And I'll kick it off. I don't do change, silver, gold. I know, like with girls have purses, right? You got somewhere to put it. Guys have like a fop pocket in their jeans, like a little, you know, a little mini pocket.
I do.
That doesn't really allow for much change to be stored.
Very
though.
Little.
You can get,
you don't want to be caught like.
How do you get it out?
Like someone
you end up having this epic struggle, don't you?
Like and someone attractive struggle. Serves you and they're like, ah, oh, that'll be $4.35. And you're like,
oh, I've got that somewhere in here.
Just tap it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, hang on. I'm just going to undo my belt a bit.
Suck my gut in and twist to the left. Let me contort a little bit there.
So one of the things I started doing was just when I get home, every time I get home, I empty my fop pocket. The silver goes in a tub near the door and the gold goes in a tub in the room. And every time the silver one gets full, I take it out to the car, put it in the car for parking change, which has become donation change because now you can do all your parking via that parking apps.
I was going to say, like, really handy. What parking except silver these days, right?
Who's
charging silver?
I know.
Right?
But I tell you what, you look like the most generous motherfucker on the street when you pull out like two big handfuls of silver and dump it in the donation box. It's probably only, you know, a few bucks.
Yeah,
but
thinking, thank you, sir.
There must be some gold amongst that, surely.
Yeah, bless you.
They didn't realise you've got this whole process behind it. You're really just dumping off some silver. It's like, get this out of my life.
The nice thing is that I've emptied my gold thing twice now. You go to you just dump it in the machine down at the Commonwealth Bank and it just counts it for you. Like 600, 800 bucks.
Wow.
And I didn't even know. Like, that was just my fop pocket. That was my shit change. So...
I can't believe you use that pocket.
Oh.
Every time you're at the door, you must spend 20 minutes trying to empty that thing. God, there was that silver. The gold would come out, no problem.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
That 50 cent coin.
There it is.
What?
There it is. He's dumping it out now.
Yeah, you've
this is not $600 worth here.
This is my
about
fop pocket.
$6 and change.
That's $10 already.
Oh, God. Yeah.
$10. $11
yeah.
bucks
and
80.
50 cent coins that came out pretty easily then.
Yeah. Well, you saw I've got my posture.
Do you ever find yourself...
Cheek had to come up.
Do you ever find yourself, like, longing for 20 cents, though, that you just wish you had on you, you know? Do you ever... Is this ever a frustrating thing that you don't have the coins with you?
Not really. I mean, if half the time my partner's with me and she's the sort of person who counts out every last 5 cent coin to pay for something. She's the exact opposite.
Isn't it funny? It must be an age thing because I'm like this... Right, but my system varies a little bit.
Yeah,
but it's very similar. But I just don't use the fob pocket.
Yeah,
and I've got money tins. I've got a gold money tin.
Yeah,
a 50 cent money tin. 50s and 20s and whatever's left. That'll probably be going out.
And do you do the same thing? Does it go to parking or donations, or does it actually go in?
No,
the bank?
I just fill them up and tip them into the bank when they're done.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Wow.
That's a good plan. Mr. Numbers, this is why you're here. Give us a simple money tip. What do we do?
Put 10% aside of every paycheck.
10%?
Yep. Simple. Put it aside as soon as you get paid for 10% away.
Is this a Catholic
forget
thing?
Forget about it. No, it's not.
Are you
not.
Trying to sign us up for some religious...
No,
isn't
it's
what
not.
They used to do? It was 10% for the Catholics, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the tithe. Yeah,
tithe.
No, it was in this old fable book I read about the beginnings of money and how the wise men of money. And so I read it and I was like, oh, that's a really simple, simple lesson. Basically, we spend whatever money we have. So as soon as you get money, put 10% aside of it and forget about it.
Yeah.
Just totally forget about it. So redirect 10% of every check you ever get and just forget about it. And you'll still get by. Everything will get paid for. It'll still happen as long as you don't go out and you know, get a lease for a BMW.
Somebody said the same thing to me about superannuation, that you should put 10% of your income into your super.
No, no, that's ridiculous to do that, because at the moment, where does where's your superannuation invested?
It's in a diversified fund, which is all predominantly members own thingy-me bob.
In look, it's probably tied up in many different stock markets.
Yeah, it's the hand thing.
It's probably tied up in various different stock markets. And at the moment, they're all in bear markets. And bear markets means they're all going backwards. So you start putting more money into super, it actually evaporates because there's a loss of confidence out there in economies. So you don't want it to go into the stock market, right? But unless you can control it.
Yeah.
Self-managed super funds.
But then at the same time, Mr. Numbers,
you need to pay
some
accountant.
As a young woman in the world who may exit the workforce at some point to have a family.
Sure.
Is it not a good idea to be putting extra into super while I'm making the moolah? Or should I just be putting it into savings, you think?
Well, it depends. It depends on your age. Do you have a mortgage, right? If you've currently got a mortgage, you're better off to put your money on that. Any extra money goes on your mortgage, pay that off first.
So that should be the priority as a general rule. If you've got a mortgage, pay that.
Pay it off.
Right, okay. Why is that? Because it hangs around your neck for so long?
You've got more control of it. Yeah, you've got more control of it at the moment. At the moment, interest rates are at an all-time low too.
Yeah.
It's non-tax deductible debt as well. So you're better off just to pay that stuff down.
Right.
And then if you've got free cash flow later on and at your later part in life too, and you've got your home paid off, when interest rates might go up in time, you don't have to worry about it. You might be able to start putting your money into super then too.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Mm. But the thing is, the rules about super are all going to change anyway. Mm. We're an aging population. The world economies are in turmoil. The taxing issues around the globe are problems because everybody's moving their businesses to different countries. So the government's
Papers thing that has happened. Right.
So no governments are earning any income anymore. These are the people that pay for pensions, okay, and in aging populations when the superannuation system's currently as it is, and the amount of money in superannuation is so large, I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of a national grab.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah,
okay.
In time.
Right.
So that's... Mm. So, I wouldn't be focusing so much on super.
Okay, cool.
I'd be focusing on other things. Well, there's just a lot of unknowns about it. There's like trillions of dollars tied up in super. The government has no money. It's not going to earn any money for a long time. The simplest solution would be to basically nationalise whatever's left in super, take control of it, and then they can say, well, we now control the superannuation system ourselves. And that would, you know...
What would then happen to like self-managed funds then? Would they be commandeered as well?
They're all under the same system, They would be up for grabs too. But that's just, you know, a bit of a hypothetical sort of situation in the future. Yeah. But it's something that could happen. So again, I wouldn't be advocating anything to do with super.
Okay. Here's a quick thing. There's so much information out there about where to invest. You know, we're being told 101 things by 101 different people. There's ads for different, you know, your INGs and your, you know, all this sort of stuff. Where do you go to for good advice? Like,
where do the accountants go? Yeah. Or do you just take your own?
You tend to just take your own because you read everywhere.
So you're well informed.
Exactly. You've got to develop a well informed opinion so you can kind of make your own decisions. If you were to just read up on somebody's advice and opinion only, you're kind of narrow minded. You're going to miss a bigger picture out there somewhere.
Mm. And that is a bit of a thing, isn't it, with the financial industry? It is important to know as a consumer, you know, as a client of accountants or financial planners or whatever, that it is opinion based. That it isn't, you know, I mean, it's an educated
stock market,
stockbrokers
and everything, yes. Mm. But look, anything to do with tax and accounting, there's a bit more of a formula, a bit more of a rigid framework to be bound to. So there are accountants out there that will kind of read something about an issue on the ATO's website and basically take it as gospel and say, this is what you have to do. But there are accountants out there that look at the legislation and say, no, no, this is what the legislation, how it reads,
and
right?
Here's how we can dance around it.
Well, no, 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 these are your options based on how it reads, right? Yeah. And then based on these options, these are the likelihood you'd be investigated if you were to choose any options. But this is the evidence you provide to back up your story. And you give people options. They're a good accountant. The average accountant is just, no, this is what you can do.
This is an interesting thing that we spoke about the other day is, you know, a lot of us think about accountants and think, like, it's a numbers thing. It's a mathematician sort of, you know, there's a boring dryness to it. But the way you talk about numbers is artistic, as you say. Well, like, it's creative. It's looking at the rules and then working at how you can.
It's that creative problem solving thing we were talking about last time, isn't it? It's really important. It's an important part of it.
Well, the numbers are really just the byproduct, right? It's just something that comes at the end. It's the problem. It's the issues that we go, right, they've got too much money. Where do we? How do we tax this appropriately? They've got to pay tax. What's the framework that we can work with here? What do the laws that allow us to do what we can do? Let's explore them. And you'd be surprised that a lot of people satisfy the tests to obtain small business concessions that you guys don't even know about that save them bucket loads in tax.
What's your take on sort of the current discussion in government about, you know, tax reform? What do you reckon would be kind of the best approach to tax reform? Like, do you think increasing the GST is a fair way of going, or do you think it would be more interesting to see company and corporate taxes increased?
Look, this is a massive discussion, right? I think the GST system's a little bit distorted. For example, lady products cop the GST and some men products don't, and I think that's rubbish. I think it's a joke. I think perhaps everything, like, you know, I don't know, perhaps everything should just be subject to GST to make it easy.
I think it's good that fresh vegetables and fruit aren't. Like, that's solving a problem. Like, it's solving an obesity crisis. People want to buy fresh fruit and veggies. Well, you get a tax break for it.
And we do respond to tax, like, you know, with a sugar tax or whatever. We do tend to respond to those things. But I think it is. Do you think, I mean, I don't know, like, just from your educated opinion, do you think companies and, you know, corporations in particular are undertaxed or have more loopholes than they should?
What a great question, right? I have discussed this with a very, very good friend before. Look, the companies don't actually pay tax, believe it or not. Yes, they go on and say, yes, we paid X amount of tax. But the way the taxing system works is, let's say you own all of the shares in Telstra, okay? Telstra decide to, they make a profit on year one of $100 and they pay their tax of 30%, which is $30, okay? So they've got $70 left in the bank, okay? The next year, they decide to pay out a dividend, a fully franked dividend. Fully franked, you say. That's basically like a dividend that you get the cash and any tax credit that they decide to put on top of the dividend.
How? I don't understand that.
So because they paid, on that $100 profit, right, they paid $30 in tax, the $70 left. They pay you $70 cash the next year in a dividend.
Yeah.
But they say it's fully franked, which basically means you can have the entire tax credit with that $70 cash. So when you lodge your tax return, you have to declare not the $70 that you received, but the $100, but you get a $30 tax refundable tax credit. Now, your tax rate is probably a lot less than 30%.
Yes.
Okay, so that $30 in tax that the company paid could get refunded out to you in full, especially... Let's change the situation. Peachy, you don't own the shares in Telstra. Your self-managed super fund does, and you're in retirement status, which means the super fund is in tax-free mode.
Oh.
So that $30 gets banked in the super fund's income with the $70, and the super fund pays zero tax. It gets the $30 refunded to it. So how much money did the Australian government just get in tax from that?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing, because it's gone out via the tax system, all 100% legally.
And probably it cost them money to transfer it, did it not?
Like sure, there's like there's
people,
a lot of
we've
stuff
got to pay people to make that happen, and the computer systems have to work, and the
but this is the, people. A lot of people think companies pay tax here, but the fact that every if you're an Australian resident, it's only available for to residents of Australia in the tax system, you can be eligible for the tax credit to come back.
Wow.
Okay, and then if you're in a self-managed super fund, which a lot of people put their investments into their self-managed super funds, and especially when they're in pension mode, they're tax-free. If they're not in pension mode, it's 15% tax rate anyway.
Still
so
pretty
it's still
limited.
The tax comes back. The tax comes back. So there's these big flaws. So companies don't pay tax at all, and you're right. I think they should be paying tax, and then people shouldn't be allowed to get franking credits back out. I don't know. It's a bigger discussion.
Why was that introduced? Was that introduced because to make people want to invest, or
people believe it's the concept of double taxation? They're receiving money that's already been taxed.
Right, so they shouldn't be taxed again. Is their thinking?
That's the concept, yes. Okay. But I think
that's a flawed concept.
It's
isn't
a little
it?
Bit flawed. It's like, well, they made money. They used the resources of the country to make that money. They've paid tax. You get what's left.
Yeah.
And then you can pay tax on what's left.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. But
no, but they get the tax credit too.
And it's such a, it's just wrong from such a fundamental sort of spot that it's hard. Like, putting the GST up by 5% doesn't really solve it, you know. Like
no, and also putting the GST up by 5% sort of taxes the wrong set of people. Really, that's the problem.
Well,
it's not. Yeah. It's a generic tax. Like everybody gets that tax. It's not targeted, you know. Like at least this would be, if this was changed, it would be quite directly targeted at the companies that are making pretty serious profits and probably should be paying their way in the community. I mean, just my take.
But this is like. I always think Rupert Murdoch gets a parking fine and I get a parking fine. Like, my $100 parking fine is worth a fucking lot more to me than Rupert Murdoch's parking fine is to him or Bill Gates' parking fine. There's no punishment in it for them. Like, there's no... I don't know, in the same way with a tax system, the 10% that I pay on my fruit and veggies bill... You know,
that has a bigger impact than the, you know, 3% that the company is going to be paying.
Should we all be issued some sort of a card when we lodge our tax return to say, okay, for the next 12 months, you're subjected to a GST rate of X percent?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you could be color category.
And then we'd all hire people like you to make sure we pay nothing.
Exactly. So we could all be yellow.
We'd just go and borrow somebody else's card.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. Maybe we'll all be microchipped soon enough and it can be possible. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
Hey, look, just because things have been a little dense for a while, I just want to change topic for a bit. We've got Mr. Numbers in and it's wonderful to talk about money, but I'm really interested to get to the real deeper questions about life. Like, Mr. Numbers, what's your shower routine? It's something we all do every day. I'd like to know what you guys do.
Mm. Okay, well, look, my favourite shower routine is...
What you've got many?
Oh, I do. It's not to have one.
Shower.
Right? It's
okay.
To be mindful. And it's called shower meditation.
Right. Nice.
So I just get in the shower and I just focus on whatever it is I'm doing. And that's all I do. And I just.
But what do you do?
I don't know. I focus. I turn the taps on and I focus on the water, the sensations of the water, because that way I just kind of clear my head for the morning.
Is it very, I mean, are you conscious of where the water travels in that meditation?
Exactly.
I
notice which part of the body it's warm. I find it very warming. That's the best way to describe the initial sensations of hopping into the shower.
So do you find sometimes you spend half an hour and don't actually do anything
I probably do, but I don't find myself realizing it because I don't pay attention to the time. But I probably do spend an awful amount of time in there and not doing the best thing for the water.
Though an inside source tells me that your shower is so terribly low pressured that it probably wouldn't matter if you spent half an hour.
Correct. Nobody would realise anyway.
It's all right. We haven't said your name, so the Melbourne Water Board won't come
in. No. Well, if you've got a low flow shower head, you're probably doing all the right things anyway. It doesn't matter. Oh,
it's ridiculously low.
Exactly.
I can always tell my state of mind by how long it is. Like when you first get in the shower, you turn the tap on, you stand, you're mindful of the thing. I can tell what state of mind I am in by how long I stand there before I actually embark on some kind of cleaning ritual. And like the more tired I am, the more I'll just stand there like a zombie and do nothing.
Mm. So you are cleaning of the body, not cleaning of the shower itself?
No, sometimes.
Where did that come from?
Mm. Oh, no.
The shower?
Well, no, I just think this is interesting because some people I know get in the shower and the first thing they do is clean the shower before they clean themselves. But I find that an interesting kind of breakdown. Why would you clean the soap scum before you create more soap scum?
Yeah, but why would you clean yourself in something dirty? How could you ever feel clean if you were surrounded by filth?
Mm.
I mean, there's different ways to look at it.
Exactly. It's true. These are the deep sort of questions. Yeah. Chris, I just need to diverge for a second because before you poured wine, and I'm fairly sure that our audience will have heard you pouring wine, and I just want to say what we're drinking this evening is a very nice rosé, a very nice... Well, West Australian company, but Tasmanian rosé, we think, called The Rivers, if anyone's interested in rosé drinking.
But The Rivers, let's be clear, The Rivers aren't sponsoring our podcast little bit, so it could be called anything for all I care.
But we are enjoying it.
It's bloody good. Mm. And if any wine companies do want to sponsor our
particularly
podcast,
particularly rosé, we're into a dry rosé, exactly.
Yeah.
Have you always been mindful in the shower, Mr. Numbers, or is that
a
recent phenomenon? Tell us about that. Like, have you come to be more mindful in recent times?
I have become, tend to become more mindful in recent times. It just helps, I think, become more emotionally intelligent.
More aware of yourself and others.
Definitely, I find it really good for figuring out what's going on in one's own mind. And then obviously other people tend to pop in the background.
Mm. Have you done any like formal mindfulness training or is it just something you've decided to?
I am a big fan of The Great Courses, who also aren't sponsoring the podcast, if they would like to. I got into one of them that was called The Science of Mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically 24 half-hour lectures.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking about it, and that's when I got into it, really fascinating stuff. I was really informative, gave it a go, and I really connected with it.
I think it's very interesting because a lot of people I know who have even just listened to lectures on it or sort of investigated the fundamental principles, most people say that it is really valuable and a really valuable kind of way of connecting back with yourself and connecting back with the moment.
As long as you don't get too carried away, I think... with a whole sort of concept and get swept up into the next kind of hippie land. Take it one step too far, you're still got to be grounded, I think.
But the whole idea is to be present with your reality.
Yeah.
If your reality becomes doing nothing other than searching for presence within, you know, like you end up being present with nothing.
That's a different spiritual. That's a spiritual quest rather than just a moment of mindfulness. Yeah.
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 Look, I know there's some great monks out there who do nothing but beg, and I'm sure that's very good for their mindfulness, but we couldn't run society if we all sat around and gave up everything and begged, you know.
Exactly.
Although I mean I'm interested in that because I think if we all applied the same philosophy, so we all came at it from a Buddhist perspective, or we were all mindful, or we were all, you know, if this was something that was universal, maybe the society would be more functional. I don't know. Mm. Maybe not. Maybe it would be nastily generic. I don't know. But I just think it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, when you realize that these things are powerful for you, and you see somebody who maybe isn't doing it, you know, being mindful, and you think, gee, you could probably really do with just some time out and some meditation and some moments to yourself. You do wonder if everybody did it or if it was more part of the mainstream or more, I mean, I think it is becoming part of the mainstream because there's a lot of corporations offering mindfulness training as a so you know, sort of personal growth programs and things. Yeah, it's becoming quite popular.
Yeah, okay.
Like I know that PricewaterhouseCoopers and KPMG and like quite a few really big corporations do run mindfulness training for their employees because it is proven to be such a strong tool in terms of a sense of well-being and really that's, you know, for so many people what's lacking.
Yeah. And Michael Moore's whole thing about, you know, you can treat your workers like shit, but you'll end up with high turnover. You'll have to spend more money training new workers.
Yeah.
Give them their time off. Give them time to pick up their kids. Give them their RDOs when they're, you know, not feeling great psychologically. And overall, when you look at it, productivity's higher, morale's higher. You know, it makes sense from an economic standpoint as well, I would have thought.
But this is what we were talking about before we were on air, you know, how even though happiness is difficult to measure and confidence is difficult to measure, these things are really quite vital in terms of the economy turning over and things running effectively. If everybody was to turn around and lose confidence instantaneously in the government or in the banks or
what,
you know,
confidence in the government
things collapse pretty quickly if you don't keep kind of I guess investing in the status quo. It's kind of an interesting notion. And once you even just look at really basic economics, you start to realise how much of it is sort of simple behavioural. There's a lot of behavioural science behind, you know, basic economic policy. Yeah.
I just loved there's a book that I read recently called Sapiens, and they talk about what differentiates.
Is that Jared Diamond?
No, but same
kind of thing, yeah.
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 So this guy was looking at, you know, so you got the apes who could manage themselves in groups of around 75 in extreme situations. About 150 apes could hang out, sleep with the same women, have a society together. Sleep with the same women. That sounds really creepy.
Apes sleeping with
they
women.
They could be led. 150 of them could
like
be
the
led.
City on a Saturday night.
without disbanding, without forming factions and warring with each other. That's as much as could happen. And
that's like the ultimate number, is it? That's
that was the critical mass.
Point. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So humanity. Homo sapiens, this wine's fantastic, Homo sapiens in particular, we had the ability to work together in millions, and it was only because of, we could sum it up, bullshit, and not just our ability to create bullshit, but our ability to believe it. And we come back to money. What's money? Like, it's not a thing.
It's a construct.
So we used to, like, if I wanted to trade some carrots for your pumpkins, for example, we decide between ourselves what a carrot's worth and what a pumpkin's worth. And maybe you don't want carrots. So you'd be like, you want one of my pumpkins? I want 85 of your
carrots.
I want
your wife.
So the fact, this idea of value and the idea of money and stuff, it's all just bullshit that we buy into. Mm. And we kind of have to. There's no real alternative at this point in humanity or in Australian humanity. Maybe there's some island somewhere.
There is the whole Bitcoin, the blockchain. You could I've
still got some Bitcoin somewhere.
Really?
I'm just a bit worried about logging back in. because of what happened with Silk Road and the FBI, I don't particularly want to log back into that environment. Not that I was involved with Silk Road at all, but, you know,
do you think that
it's all tied together.
That wallet is now being tracked.
Yeah.
So absolutely. That's out in the ether.
That's interesting.
I bought them at $40 a Bitcoin, and they went up to well over $1,000
a Bitcoin. $1,180 or something.
God, that's amazing, isn't it? Well, pure supply and demand.
Well, I had a great idea to roll everything into a self-managed super fund and go and buy everything in the self-managed super fund in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And that's when they were about $40 a Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And now wish you had.
But I wasn't sure on the rules. I spoke to a few people and I said, what are the rules about investing in Bitcoin? And somebody said, well, it's not a tangible
thing.
So
isn't
then
it?
Nobody
yeah.
could say whether
but
or not.
Why is it more tangible than any other
thing? That's what I said. I said, it's
a
buy a hard drive, that's tangible, right?
Yeah.
It's on there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's any better.
But that's just probably because the regulations haven't kept up with the reality of the internet.
They hadn't at the time, but they have now.
Have they now?
The tax office is all over Bitcoin.
Really?
Oh,
interesting.
It's all a big thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That's very interesting.
But yeah, so you could participate in another sort of currency world if you wanted to. It is accepted in a few places.
Still the same notion, though, isn't it?
You have to find people who are willing to trade in whatever.
That's what I'm saying. There are a few, but... Yeah.
Like, for example, I'm quite partial to a certain brand of laptops. You know, I can't buy laptops in anything other than dollars, you know.
Yeah.
And I need it for my work, so... I'm sorry, my carrots.
The system, then. They
I brought heaps of carrots. They didn't want my carrots. Or your pumpkins, for that matter.
Or some
my
other
wife.
Sort of fruit or vegetable, perhaps.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh. It's interesting. I run a... sort of basic citizenship unit in one of my classes with the younger year levels, sort of year sevens. And one of the core things that we do in creating a community is to teach about the political system and how to vote and all of that sort of stuff. And one of the sort of fundamentals that I teach is the basic concept of opportunity cost. You know, if I want to buy a house but I don't have enough money, is the opportunity of buying that house worth the cost of the sort of ongoing mortgage, or worth the cost of my, you know, a portion of my income or whatever it might be, or worth the cost of my savings, whatever it is. But it's very interesting in speaking to young people who may be coming across this concept for the first time about the things they're willing to sacrifice and the things that the way they prioritize. And I wonder to what extent your spending habits or the way you view opportunity and cost is actually formulated much younger than we realize. Like, our financial sort of perspective or habits are formed really in that sort of nature nurture stage. Like, I wonder what, as you were saying before, Mr. Numbers, about, you know, to what extent is it personality based, and to what extent is it also about the environment you've grown up in? Even the way you value money or you value assets is kind of interesting. Because for me at the moment, you know, I'm building, wanting to build a house. And the cost is massive, you know, but to me the sort of long-term opportunity is sort of worth that cost. But there's a, it's a big gamble. You know, it's a scary gamble, you know. Yeah.
But it's not a gamble when, you know, people talk about the value of their house. The value of your house is not set by other people. If you own a house, the value of your house is the enjoyment you get out of it, the family that you bring up in it, the memories you have in it.
But see, that's your perspective on it. You know, we've got friends who it's all about market value with a house. It's a house. It's not about a home. It's a house, and it's how you invest in it and how you do it up and sell it on. And, you know, that's a very, you know, capitalist approach to the home. But your philosophy, like what you're giving us there, is a philosophy or an approach to money. And that's the thing, like, you know, my planner was saying to me, he said, the thing is, this is probably not an intelligent investment. You know, it's not, the opportunities does not outweigh the cost in your case. But he's like, but it's a lifestyle choice, and it's something you really want, and that's the thing. The value of it for me is in the kind of lifestyle it will give me, and that's not about money in the long run. You know, and this is what we were saying too. Like, that's what's interesting for accountants is, you know, you have to understand your client, you have to understand where they're coming from, and whether that's almost, I hate to say it, but like sentimental or sort of emotional attachment to a thing outweighs the cost of it, you know?
Yeah, but coming back to the enjoyment of it, if you'd won the lottery and you're like, sweet, I'll just buy a block and I'll just rip up this massive McMansion on the coast, you wouldn't have nearly the sense of pride or enjoyment as you'll have if you ever get that bloody house done. It's been a thing for that long. It's been, you know, when it comes together, and, you know, when we get to drink some rosé down on the the bay, that's,
and when Mr. Numbers has worked out a really good, like, tax rort for my investment on the beach.
Not a rort, Peachy.
Sorry.
It's work a, within the framework.
Within the framework.
Yeah, it's working within the framework. Okay,
it's a creative solution.
Exactly. Yeah. Numbers and people, put them together. What do you get?
depends on which sort of people, right?
Exactly, absolutely. Yeah, that's interesting.
But you can't buy the struggle. Like,
no,
the struggle's
no,
really
it's
important.
True. Yeah. Well, I am on my own episode of Grand Designs right now. It's unbelievable. I should be filming it.
So, you know, we hear a lot about Gen Y saying that, you know, the baby boomers stuffed it up for the rest of us, and, you know, we can't afford houses and we can't afford
it's
this.
It's true.
It's there's a truth to it, but my parents are the people who are being complained about. So my parents both came from the country. They both came from nothing. They worked their ass off. They moved into a house in Essendon, a little dump in Essendon, which at the time was worth nothing. Like, it was very much on the outskirts of Melbourne. They renovated it themselves with their own hard work. They sold it. They moved to, you know, the southeast, and they've been there ever since. So the same people who are complaining, they're not out there buying a place out in Whoop Whoop, renovating it, moving up. They're going out, they've got a $1,000 phone in their pocket. They're going out drinking $4 coffees once or twice a day. They're eating $50 meals. Like, I'm not...
Oh, but I'm not sure that we can use the cost of living against people.
Yeah, but that's not a... The cost of living, like, for me, I don't get preachy about it. I don't eat meat at the moment. I go to the supermarket and get two huge bags of food. They'll last me 2 weeks, and it's like $20. Mm. The cost of living is not high. We're sold these ideas by marketing companies that we need to eat 500 grams of meat per meal, that we need to eat this expensive stuff. You don't.
But then I didn't, and then I was iron deficient and really miserable. So
well,
I don't
you have
know.
A little bit, though.
Yeah.
It's all about balance, I guess.
All I'm saying is I know that there's a problem, there's a housing problem, and prices are up. But I also think that people
there's
are
maybe
a bit
unrealistic
skewed.
Expectations.
But
yes,
you can't have a house and spend all your money on shit.
Yeah,
like it's one or the other. And for my parents,
it's the
who
cost
are being
of the opportunity.
And so people complaining about the baby boomers, they're people like my parents, who weren't rich at all. Like, they're not moguls. They just never spent any money. They were tight asses. They worked their ass off. They built up their things themselves. So I don't know. I think it's a bit skewed.
Well, I think a lot of people are taking the piss, right? Because this whole gap in house prices has only really taken off in the last 10 years, if anything. These guys, baby boomers, they've lived through 17-18% interest rates, right? Now they're like 4,
exactly.
5.
Exactly.
And then these people are taking the piss. Yeah. We do whinge about it. Is unaffordable. It's not the baby boomers' fault. It's government policies that create this issue.
Yep.
You've got people that allow
you
negative...
You blame the right people.
Well, you've got negative gearing allowed, and at the same time, these people have been negative gearing a property for 20 years, then get a 50% discount when they go and sell the damn thing too. Mm. So they pay no tax on it.
Mm.
They've paid zero tax on it. They just had wealth creation allowed.
Yeah.
And they use that wealth to put it into another property to achieve a higher, another tax deduction.
Yeah.
And it's just... multiplying
from
effect,
what I hear too, if you invest, if you have it rather than in like buy 10 houses in Victoria, if you buy one house in each state, you can totally reduce, like when you sell your investment, you have to pay what, 50% of the capital gains in tax.
So the way it works is for standard residential properties, okay, you get a 50% discount on the capital gain. Okay.
Yep.
And then what's left? So if you spent $100,000 on the property to buy it, including stamp duty, and then you sold it for $500,000, you've made $400,000 profit, you'll get taxed on $200,000 off that.
Okay.
Now, if that's in your own name, that $200,000 will be added to your other income for the year and taxed at your marginal tax rate.
Yep.
Okay, if it's not owned by you...
And that's not considered double tax. I love that.
Well, but the thing is, if a lot of the times it's not owned by one person, it'll be owned by two people. So then the $400,000 gain gets the 50% discount down to $200,000. That just gets split 50-50. So they're both well under the top marginal rate of $180,000. And then sometimes that property might be in a trust.
Yeah.
Right? And then you've got four adult beneficiaries you can use, so it gets split four ways.
Mm.
10 adult beneficiaries, 10 ways.
Yeah.
So instead of $200,000 getting taxed at one marginal tax rate, it gets taxed $20,000 among 10 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and again, not a high tax take on that investment property.
No, so there's a lot of big holes, aren't there?
There's massive holes in the tax system.
Yeah.
And investment properties. Look, I think the housing pricing gap is a result of government policies in general.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. But it will come back the other way eventually.
It's all pendulum, isn't it, with this stuff?
But it just might take a long time. Yeah. It might be 20 years from now. It might be a really long time, but it swings back.
Stuff
it
always cycles. Yeah.
It's all cycles.
So is life in general,
and that's
really
what I was saying earlier. Mm. Interest rates are at an all-time low now. So they pay it all down now.
Yeah.
Because it might be down for about 10 years, but they will go back up.
Yeah.
So it'll be down low for a while.
Yeah.
But,
Scares the hell out of me, mortgages.
Yeah. I find one thing I find really interesting about money is I lived as a very, very carefree bachelor for, you know, most of my existence. And I was never thinking ahead. And I never had, I always had enough money to do what I wanted to do.
Mm. Which really is the ideal, isn't it?
Yeah. I've never been without. And when I say not being without.
And we're
without,
all very lucky sitting at this table.
Yeah. You know? We live, I mean, we are the top 1% of the world just because we grew up in Melbourne in Australia in the, you know, 80s to noughties. And yeah, we're lucky, lucky people. Mm. I can't remember what I was talking about.
Oh, sorry. Did I just kill your thought?
That's good wine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good wine, right?
It's doing what we needed to do. No.
Or maybe it just wasn't a good point.
No. What were you saying? You were saying something about your freedom as a bachelor and not needing anything. Yeah.
So what I find with money. What I find really interesting, and it's like the hippies talk about putting something out into the universe and it comes back to you.
Oh, the secret.
And that sort of stuff. Mm. Now, I don't believe that it works because you drew that picture of your bike and stared at it every day. That's not how it works. It works because once you have a focus on something, your actions, your words, everything that you know, your actions start reflecting your desires. Mm. What I found really...
Positive psychology is very powerful.
Yeah,
you
know, so...
Like when you focus on something, you
I want a new job. Mm. If I tell everyone about it, eventually someone goes, oh, I got a job. You want a job? Mm. I got a job. And that's kind of how the universe works. The more you put out there, the more you get. And for me with money, it's really similar. I've never managed to save, but as soon as I, like I'm saving for a wedding at the moment, which is a ridiculous amount of money. I'm disgusted.
Waste. Absolutely waste. Mr. Numbers would not recommend a wedding.
Oh no, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan. Big, big fan. But just... At the right price, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Get a bargain where you can. Yeah.
See, I thought, you know, when I thought about what that right price was, you know, it's very different to how it turned out. And eventually you're like, I could just get a paddock and then hire a marquee and then do this and do this. You know, like, I can't be bothered. I've got 30 people coming from overseas.
But it's also not that much cheaper in the long run.
It is.
It's an interesting thing.
It can be cheaper.
Look,
my first point is, as soon as I had that in mind... Instantly, I had the money just because instead of spending the money, I just put the money somewhere and, you know, and it was, as you said, it's gone away. It's like the 10%. But for me, it was like 90%.
Yeah.
Like I'm so used to living off nothing.
Chinese
it was
culture.
Easy. I just put all my money in there and I'm like, oh, I just buy some vegetables. That's cheap, you know, whatever. Vegetables and a train ticket. We should be right. It just comes about. Like it's not that you have to, you know. It's just that you put it away and instead of, you know, I know it's already there. I can always take it back from that savings account if I want something else. But once you've put it there, it's kind of like it's harder to take it out than it is just to leave it there.
Mm.
You have to think about it, don't you?
Yeah.
It's got to be a motivated action.
Yeah, you kind of have to stare at yourself and go, you know.
Yeah.
Back to the wedding thing. The wedding thing shits me and let me just vent for a little bit. Back in the day... Let's say 40 years, let's say our parents' generation, taking your friends out, putting them in a room together, having a three-course meal was a very special thing to do. That was pretty rare. Now...
But that's not the wedding. That's the after party.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a reception.
Yeah, it's a reception, right.
Mm.
That's what you spend all your money on.
Right,
spend,
so hang on. The wedding, it's the reception.
The reception,
yeah.
The reception.
Yeah,
it's the whole, it's the whole
yeah,
thing.
It's all about the party.
So, so let's say, for example, I was spending, let's say X amount, let's say I'm spending $100 a head to feed guests. Now, they turn up, they eat their beef or their chicken, and it doesn't matter where you go, like, it's a mass-produced meal. Mm. Even if it's really good, mm. it's still the beef or the chicken. Or maybe the fish, if you're getting fancy.
Ooh.
It's not special anymore. Like, the fact, it used to be such a wonderful thing. Now,
but that's because how many people
I would love to have a wedding with a sort of medieval feast of, like, fucking pig or something. You know what I mean? Like, get really, you know, a bit creative about it.
Bring
you know?
The
we'll start,
yeah.
start fucking saving
people. I know, exactly, exactly. Oh, dear. My dad used to run a sort of mad dinner party scheme in the 80s where he would literally.
Scheme?
Yeah, where he would literally cook. Animals over an open fireplace in this sort of mad dining room in this
wow.
sort of house in Beaconsfield Parade, and he would have dwarves serving, and you know, kind of mad novelty, you know, absolute novelty dinner party. That's the kind of thing I would want for my wedding, like something
that's pretty cool.
really outlandish and totally different, so that it isn't beef and chicken. But I imagine, Chris, as you say, it would cost me a small fortune,
yeah.
like you know, to have. The novelty, but then again, I also am starting to think the older I get that I probably will be having an on-the-shelf party, not a wedding. But regardless, at my on-the-shelf party, I'm starting to think that I don't like that many people, and therefore I would probably have quite a small gathering of intimates who I like. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Right. So suddenly it's not about beef and chicken by the thousands. It's about, you know, one suckling pig and a dwarf, you know.
I would hope, Peachy, that you'd be more sensitive. I'd hope I'd be at your wedding for starters, and I hope if I was there that you'd be more sensitive than to bring a dwarf to your wedding.
Would you be happy for me to chop your legs off? You can walk around in shoes, knees in shoes, Chris.
It'd be better. It'd be better, a little bit. But no, look, I think the whole system, the whole idea of what a wedding, what that celebration is, just needs to be, it needs to be modernised.
And revised,
It needs to be revised. Like, what's special about it? I love ceremony. And, you know, I grew up in a religious environment with school and in my parents. I'm since...
You always look good in that sort of white cloaky thing.
That's what my priest told me.
I used to like it when you had the smelly incense thing coming down the thing. I used to be quite proud of that. I was like, that's my friend with the incense thing.
Oh, yeah. I dangled a good bit of frankincense.
You were a good altar boy.
But like...
Don't discount that. It's pretty good, Colonel.
We really... Oh, I've come a long way from there. We really do lack ceremony in today's society.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watch the one little bit of ceremony that I have, probably the only bit that I have regularly now, is a birthday. And because I got little nephews and nieces, we make a big deal. We turn the lights off, we light the candles, and we do this, you know, because my brothers and I, we're all singers. So we make a thing because we're not on the clock. We sing as badly as we can. Happy birthday to... You know, it's atrocious. But the kids, I mean, they don't know what's going on, but it happens regularly, like six, seven, eight times a year. We all get together and do this ridiculous thing together. But I can see they look forward to it. And it's it's happening again. It's happening. And that's what ceremony is.
Yeah.
And so, like, now...
You were talking the other day, sorry to butt in, but talking the other day about how important those small rituals or ceremonies are in developing cultures within groups, you know, like you were saying with, you know, different activities that you run, how important that kind of coming together and having a moment to actually start, like make it clear that something started. You know, I had that today with my rehearsals, you know, we play a particular warm-up game to like mark the beginning of that rehearsal, and that's something they all know how to play, and they all, you know, it's, I don't know, it sounds really, that's a really basic school way of putting it, but it is, you know, a kind of minimized version of what you're talking about.
I mean, we do a thing with our workshop with Indigenous communities or school communities or even corporate groups, and we, in our warm-up games, we put people in teams and we award points And we say, ah, oh, 300 points to the, you know, to the Red Demons for, you know, for getting together the quickest in their huddle.
Yep.
And it motivates people.
It's bizarre.
It's like
isn't
I talked about the bullshit thing, like Homo sapiens. These people do it. No one. And I always thought when I first learned how to deliver the program, I was like, oh, so what do the points get people? And they're like, oh, the points don't actually matter. And you're like, but we're putting so much importance on it. Like the whole first day is about winning points for your team.
I spent
like,
a whole term allocating points to kids, and it doesn't mean anything.
And they're like. And I'm like, well, what do you do? What do you do when they ask you about the points? Like, oh, trust me, they never ask about the points. I'm like, what do you mean? They've just been toiling away for these points, and it's true. They don't give a shit. But the focus it gets people. Oh, I've just let down my team. I've just lost my team 100 points. I'm going to pick up my game.
Yeah.
But it's that ritual. It's the bullshit. Mm. It's the bullshit that ties us all together, and you know, makes us behave. You know, unlike apes.
Yeah. But that's where, I mean, it is interesting. Like, it is sort of birthdays and deaths and weddings where we do have those kind of more formal ceremonies or rituals already set up, depending on, you know, what sort of culture you're coming from. But most cultures sort of have something to mark those kind of key moments in your life. And it's interesting because I guess both the funerals and the weddings I've been to where those rituals might be a bit more dismissed or might be completed with less elaborateness, that they feel deeply lacking. It feels really – like this particular Lapine prepaid funeral I went to was so awful. It was one of the most awful things I've ever been to, and it made me realise just how important it is to have somebody who knows you presiding over that ceremony.
Yeah.
But maybe the person who was responsible for organising it had never organised one before too, right? Never been around death before too.
Oh, it was a prepaid funeral. So it was like a real, like, they had paid for their own funeral. So, you know, it would be like you have already paid for your funeral. And it's just a matter of time, Mr. Numbers, before that, you know. And obviously,
have I already sent out the guest list?
No, but when they prepay their funeral, that obviously they got like quite a sort of a bit of a kind of like, you know, home brand version of a funeral. And what effectively happened was, you know, it was sort of like a biscuit, some instant coffee, and a guy standing up the front who had no idea who they were. It was quite awful, and there weren't very many guests because by this stage a lot of their friends had died. And
it's like, oh, you want a poem? Oh, that's going to cost you extra.
Yeah,
like, oh,
you want to light candles?
Oh, that's going to cost you.
Things make a really big difference, you know. They do make a big difference.
But the guy's in a box. The person's in a box. Won't enjoy it. Won't even know what's going on. Why?
Well, that was obviously their reasoning when they there was no other family around. No, well, that was what was so really awful about it. These were like my neighbours who, you know, I had grown up with. They'd been like sort of surrogate grandparents to me, and it was just awful. The relatives they did have left turfed all of their belongings onto the nature strip and sold that house within a week of them dying. It was really awful. It was awful.
Wow.
Yeah, and it just made me realise and appreciate how important ritual ceremony, family is in those moments as markers of respect. And of those that couple were incredible. They had contributed to the community in so many ways, and it was so awful to see them so unceremoniously burnt, you know. It was terrible.
Here's a question for you, Mr. Numbers. I was at a funeral on Saturday. Yep. Didn't know the guy very well. It was a family, great uncle. Nice enough guy, but didn't know him really from a bar. So why was I crying at the funeral?
Probably empathy, perhaps, because everybody else was crying.
Fear of your own
mirror
death?
Neurons.
Yeah, like, did you feel anything at all? Like, what were you feeling inside?
I must admit, I was right in the firing line. I had my nana, it was her brother who died, and she's in a, you know, she's had a stroke. She's in a wheel. I was controlling her wheelchair for her, and I was sitting sort of patting her shoulder while she sobbed, and my mum was on the other side sobbing with her other sister. So, yeah, it's kind of...
Probably empathy, I think.
But I feel like I'm there to be strong. Why can't I just suck it up and smile and be like, well, it's, you know, I can just...
That'd be pretty weird if you could sit there in that scenario and sit there smiling. I would be really worried by that, Colonel.
Come on, cheer
honest.
Up.
I would think there was something a bit sociopathic going on.
Yeah.
Why do you want to be somebody that can sit there and go, come on, guys, it'll be okay?
I don't want to be. I find death a really funny thing because when I'm really upset, there's never been a situation where I've been really upset crying about someone and I haven't, in the back of my mind somewhere, thought, why am I crying? Like, it's not even my mum. It's not even my dad, you know. So there's a guilt about being too upset. But then if you're not upset, there's this guilt of like, oh, why am I so happy? I'm in a really sad place. I should be more sad. It's this constant cycle of grief, whether you're positive or negative about it. It's just... You know, it's just a process you got to go through,
That's where shower meditation would have come from, my friend.
Yes, well, I reckon.
If only they had showers at the funeral. I would have had one.
You would have been fine, exactly. But do you think that's interesting because often, I don't know, but often in my experience, and this is just purely, but I do often find that I am more upset at the funerals of those who are connected, not directly to me, but through others who I love, because I'm distressed at their sadness. You know, like I feel that that's so awful for them. But also, it seems to me often when you go to funerals and it is somebody's dad or mum, they're often the least emotional at the funeral. They're often the most kind of cold and stoic to it, and that's quite disturbing.
But part of that ceremony, that's why the ceremony is important. Is because they've got a role to play. So they're thinking about, right, I've got this poem to read, right, and next I've got to invite people to sandwiches afterwards and next. Like it's all an important part of the start of grief.
Yeah.
It's like, let's keep busy. And then you have people around you, right? You need people around you in that sad time. And then you have your alone time.
Then you often hear about that. That's what people say is the most difficult bit once the sound dies down, once the noise of people, you know, bringing you cake dies down and you're alone in the house and you suddenly go, oh, I am really alone, that's when grief really kicks in, because there's a kind of busy chaos that comes with, you know, death. That there's so much to do. There's so many jobs. You don't have time to grieve, you know.
That's why I like... I'm kind of booked. I'm booked 20 years in advance for funerals of the family. It's like, you know, I'm just expected to sing because I'm a singer. You know, everyone just sort of, for the last 15 years, all my older relatives have been like, oh, you're going to be there? You're going to sing at my funeral? Anything? I don't know if I could do it for my mum or my dad or my brothers or my mates. But, you know, for a great auntie or someone, I'd rather sing than just sit there and do nothing. I like having a purpose.
You feel like you're contributing,
I'm doing something. It's something that I can give and show that I cared, other than just bring a box of tissues and hand them out. You know, it's a way to contribute. Now look, we're heading towards the end of the podcast, and I don't want to end on death and funerals.
Some morbid subject.
So
it's a reality, though, isn't it? Yeah, death and taxes,
right?
We've covered everything today.
Brought me on the right night, right?
So, look, what I want to do quickly, because I think this is really important to people. Maybe not. I think this is really a burning question in everybody's minds.
It is in yours, yes.
Yeah. I want to get back to shower routine.
Oh.
Just quickly, like, we do it every day. Like, everyone, well... I hear the English are a bit sloppy about their showers, but most of us in Australia, from what the statistics I read, have a shower at least once a day. It's part of our either morning ritual or our evening ritual. So what I'd like to hear from you both quickly is it a morning or an evening or an afternoon, for that matter, ritual? What's the order of proceedings? Like, what happens when you get in there? Do you, you know, what order do things happen in? Do you wash your hair first? Do you wash your feet first? Like, do you have a routine?
Okay, yeah.
Or is just get all mindful with it?
No, look, it is mindfulness, but there is a bit of a strategy you got to follow, of course. So you start off, before you jump into the shower, it's teeth.
Yeah.
Teeth before getting to the shower.
I do my teeth in the shower.
Yeah, me too.
I don't shave every day.
As the water warms up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't shave every day,
I can tell.
But it doesn't happen before the shower. Yep. So it's teeth, maybe a mouthwash. It depends what I'm feeling.
You can't shave before the shower. You need the water to soften.
You need that warm water to soften up the beard.
Open the pores.
Yeah. It would be a mouthwash, Listerine, or the Oral B White Diamond, depending on how I'm feeling.
That's thorough.
Then it's I'll put on.
But no flossing.
No, the flossing is a nighttime thing.
Okay.
Right, and the shower is a morning thing.
Do you floss every day?
I try to, yes. Yeah.
Excellent.
Depends.
Unless, hygiene, very
yeah, good. Unless I'm a bit sloppy after a big night or something, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And then I'll put on some music before I jump into the shower to assist with the mindfulness. usually something along the lines of Brian Eno. But then when
our listeners are going to want to be there with you next time.
Yeah, it sounds very pleasant.
Can I recommend the Plateau of Mira? Such an experience. And then in the shower, it's top to bottom. So start with the hair, shampoo, really feel.
Every shower, always a shampoo?
It is every shower, top to bottom, every shower. But it's also conditioner.
Okay.
I like a good conditioner as well. Mm-hmm. I like
Do you have a particular brand?
No, I'm usually, being Mr. Numbers, I usually go for what's on the special. But I spend time looking at what's on the special and I analyse what's on special.
Not just the price, but the per 100
milligram. Well, no. The price attracts me, but then I look at the finer detail. What are their selling points apart from the money?
What sort of volume am I getting
No, not volume either.
Like, I mean, volume for your hair.
Not volume of the actual contents.
Yeah.
Yes. and that's it, right? In between the toes,
Are you a hard block soap man or are you a,
Look, I have, body scrub. Okay, right. I have different for different parts of the body.
Interesting.
So bars of soap.
Yeah.
I find the bar of soap is good for the man bits, right?
But you get a good lather up, is that you're thinking? Or
like,
do you pre-lather?
Like I don't like lots of chemicals.
Or do you just go straight
on? Well, I don't like lots of chemicals on that thing.
Mm. So do you do like an olive oil based soap or a... Like,
Dove.
Do you have a particular Dove
Beauty Bar.
Right. Yeah. So a bit of 3/4 moisturising.
It is.
Okay.
Wow.
And it's body wash for the rest.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
And what about you guys? So look, there's not much more to my routine unless you want to be in there with me.
With your soap bar, are you like swiping like a credit card down the back or is it only for the
man
front
bits.
Section?
Yeah. Everyone's got those bits.
Yeah.
Man bits for the beauty bar.
Okay. Mm.
So no. That's and it's a lather in the hand.
Mm.
In the bar,
and
then
the
it goes back on. The application's all done with a loofah with the body wash or the hand with the body beauty bar.
Do you wash your feet with any detail every day, or is it something
every day?
Yeah, right.
Every day, scrub and loofah. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I must admit, I don't.
Really?
I have the spongy thing for my feet too.
Really hard for me to do that too.
With your back.
It's really hard, yeah.
You've got it's an awkward position anyway, best of times.
It's pretty messed up, yeah.
Peach, do you have anything to offer there?
I'm top to bottom. I don't do my hair every day. I do my hair probably... Well, I used
You're
to
You're a natural
do,
oil
No,
sort of
I
person.
Used to do my hair every day, and then my hairdresser said, this is not good for your curly hair. You actually need to give it a break. So I do it every second day. And normally I time it with my gym. So like post-gym sweaty hair, get rid of that. That's not nice.
Nice.
I do my teeth, as it warms up. And I actually do the body... Pre-face. I do the face as the last thing. I do my facial scrub as the last thing.
But what if your facial oils run down?
I don't worry about that because I actually sort of stick my head in as a separate thing because I adjust the temperature because I'm concerned about my little facial pores. I don't want to burn them. So I just pull it all off
for the separate
temperature because, you're not meant to put really hot water on your face. It's very bad for your capillaries and I'm a very red person, so I have to be quite careful about that. Yeah,
that's what I've been doing wrong.
Yeah, you actually do know.
I've got one solid temperature.
Apparently, but as soon as we turn 40, we have to start cleansing with oil. Now, I find that a disturbing notion. I don't think that putting oil onto oil is cleansing.
No, that's rubbish.
Exactly. We're not a chopping board. That's exactly true,
we're not,
Mr. Numbers.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I don't have a lot to add there. I I do the same. I turn the shower on. I start brushing my teeth.
I take my toothbrush. I don't turn the shower on before I brush the teeth.
And then you get into the shower.
But see, my thing is the shower takes a little while to warm. I've got a little bit of time
to kill.
But
how long have you got? Like 20 seconds to kill. Not 2 minutes.
So what do you do? What, are you just fucking, you're just mindful?
No.
You're just hanging out looking at the shower.
Well, hey, like it's all about the experience, being aware, a present moment, experience with acceptance.
Okay, yeah, that's beautiful, Nick. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. No, I turn the water on. I start brushing as soon as it's warm. I take my toothbrush in. I'm on an electric toothbrush guy, so it's timed. It's a 2 minute job.
I'm a believer in the electric toothbrush. It's a much better clean.
It's fantastic.
You can never go back. And I never used to brush my teeth, or if I did, it was such a half-assed effort. I like the fact that it tells me how long I've got to brush for. And it's always much longer than you think.
Oh, way longer. Yeah. I get like, so bored.
I watch my partner do it with a manual thing. She's always done well before me. Mm. I think you're underdoing.
They don't realise the shortcuts they take.
Mm,
that's true. And, of course, top to bottom, I wash my hair every day. I'm just a greasy.
Do you condition as well?
No, but okay. I tell you, here's an interesting thing. Shaving. I've always worked for myself. So shaving's kind of like I clean shave and then I just let it grow for as long as I can until I can't bother. Now I have to shave quite regularly because I work for someone else. I've tried shaving gels, shaving creams, shaving oils. I've tried everything. All over the world I try out a new thing. The one that works best is Dove Conditioner. Dove, sponsor our podcast. Listen to the plug.
Well, I use Dove body wash as well. Yeah. You use the Dove body bar. Exactly.
Bloody hell.
This is, you know,
I'm going to beep it out. I'm going to beep it out until you sponsor. Just the conditioner.
Dove conditioner?
Yeah, just the hair conditioner. You just put it on your face. You leave it there for a little bit. It softens the hair. That's what it's there for. And unlike the gels, the shaving creams, whatever, when I use, and I use a three blade, I'm not going to say the name of it, a three blade shaver.
That's your problem.
Which I've used forever, that's fine. The conditioner goes through the blades, it doesn't get gunked up. So I don't even have to wash the thing. I can just shave the whole thing.
I'm interested in this, I'll give it a go. Yeah.
Honestly,
do you use a mechanized shaver? Or?
Look, I've got both. I've got the whole electric doodaddy, but I'm a big fan of the I won't say the brand, but it's a five blade. And it does something. It kind of it sucks the skin up as it nicks it.
Oh,
it gets this closer shave happening. It's really good. I'm doing this motion with
you are.
You can't see it.
It's not great for the podcast. Yeah. We saw it, we loved it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, one last quick shower question. If you had say that those rare times in your life, you're about to do something important. You've literally got 20 seconds of shower time. What do you do with your 20 seconds?
Armpits, charm pits.
Nice.
Yeah, basically, same. Yeah.
Yep.
Johnny armpits.
Yeah.
Probably
butt crack.
Probably.
It's all a charm pit, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Armpits exactly. And everything's a charm pit, right?
Yep.
I'll just throw one other in there. One of the reasons I shower is to get my nose properly blown. And I'll actually breathe water through my nose, fill up my sinus, and then blow it all back out. Mm. And that, as a singer too, like I'm really aware of what's in my sinuses.
I use the best spray for that. I do that separately. Like, so that's, I get out of the shower and then I fest spray just with like the, just generic fest, like not for colds or whatever. Fest spray that like clears everything out, makes me feel pretty good.
Explain fest spray for me.
Yeah.
So it's just a saline water that you get in a spray.
Is that a
form.
Brand you're talking about?
Well, it is a brand, but I think it's, I don't know that there's any other like brand available in this particular just plain
Germans
saline
have
spray.
The Germans have these teapots that have a special nozzle and stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's not an actual nose enema. Like, it's not like one of those extreme things. It's just like a Rhinocort sort of like normal pump.
Yeah, gotcha.
But the thing that it was originally developed for people who fly a lot, you know, like there's a bit of tea tree spray in it and it's just straight saline and it just, cleans you out. And because I have really bad hay fever, that for me is kind of fundamental to the beginning of the day, especially this time of year where it's just crazy. Yeah.
I'm so glad we got to the bottom of that. Yeah. I'm sure everyone was dying to find out how we all shower. And I think, you know, that's what brings us all together, those little things that we all do.
How long does your routine take you, out of curiosity?
Oh, it depends how long I've got, man. Mm. You know, like, as I, sometimes if I'm like zonk tired, I'll wash my hair and then I'll wash my hair again and I'll be like, I'll sit there and I'll go, and I know, because you know when you're washing your hair and it's already been done, it feels different because there's no oils left in your hair. And I'm like, sometimes I think, how many times have I just done that? You know, like I'm so zoned out sometimes. And then there's the times where you're like, you know, you realize you're washing your face with your you know, like your exfoliating facial scrub because you just forgot what you're doing. Yeah, I'm revealing way too much about my state of mind, I think.
But I think it's interesting. Like, I would like to hear from our listeners about if they have any particular, you know, hot tips for shower routines. We would love to hear about them.
Because really, if someone's doing something better, that could affect everyone's life every day.
Yeah, exactly. I'm conditioner on the face. Who would have guessed? You know? Yeah.
And the only reason I know is because I was reading something on Reddit. Someone was asking they're not a sponsor. Someone was asking how you can best shave your lady bits. And I was just like, well, I don't have to shave my lady bits, but I'm just interested to hear.
You've got some nice cheeks that need some love.
But I just interested to read, and they suggested that conditioner was the best because it stops ingrown hairs coming up for some other reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
Because of the softening, I think.
It softens the follicle.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It helps it pull out.
So it means it's less likely to turn in on itself. Mm. It's not as traumatised.
Yeah. So, look, we've gone 20 minutes over, but I don't feel that's a bad thing. I've had a really nice chat. Mr. Numbers, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really enlightening.
Had a great time.
It's been great.
Yeah. You have a good way of explaining complex numbers stuff that I've never cared anything about, and now I feel I understand them a bit more.
It's true. Maybe you can come back another time.
Love to.
Later in the season.
Love to.
Very good.
Well, that was episode 2 of Peachy and the Colonel. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're a sponsor out there who's listening who'd like us to drink their rosé or scrub our lady bits and our man jump bits with your body scrub, just let us know and we'll add it to our routine. Anyway, take care. Love you all. And we'll be back with you soon. Bye-bye.